Thank you for listening to CJ Mars Radio Network, WCJV Digital Broadcasting of Ghost Town, New York. We're bringing you the best in paranormal broadcasting 24/7, featuring shows such as Half Past Dead Paranormal with host Roger Bell, Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern. Paranormal News Insider with Dr. Brian Parsons, Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Paranormalities and Ponderings with host Frank Lee, Tuesday, 9 p.m. Eastern. Paranormal Experience with Kat Hobson, Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern. Starlight 17 with Deborah Jane East, Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern. Blackthorn Path with Auntie G and Mumsy B, Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern. And finally, The Paranormal Chronicles with G.L. Davies, Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern. Stay tuned for the best in paranormal. Let's learn together. That's what we do here. Don't forget to tune in. CJMarsRadio.com.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Presented by CJMarsRadio.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for November 3rd, 2015, and episode number 238. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Well, this week's news includes the Loch Ness Monster being found in a pub, butterfly UFOs invading Ohio and Kentucky, UFOs over India, ghost tours. We're going to talk about ghost tours, and are they really crossing the line? And a giant skull misses Earth on Halloween, and we're going to exorcise some demons. Well, maybe on the treadmill. Plus conscious conventions and a ton, 2 weeks worth more, and then some. There's a lot of news to cover this week. Lots of things that have gone on the last 2 weeks. We didn't have a live show last week, but I did put up something that I'll talk about here in a second. And just the last 2 weeks, I've done quite a bit of stuff. It was great to catch up with Jeff Cole, author of Ghostly Encounters, Confessions of a Paranormal Investigator, while he was signing books at Barnes & Noble in Mentor, Ohio. Yes, there's still bookstores out there, a few and far in between. A week ago last Friday, October 23rd, and it was we talked a lot about the E4 method and trying to utilize that in his investigations and things. So we may be pairing up sometime in the future. And it was also a nice motivator for me to finish some projects and get my own books published by an actual publishing company instead of settling for self-published. It's great, don't get me wrong, but I'd love to see my stuff on a bookshelf instead of just libraries be able to go to these places and sign books as well. And a big shout-out to those who attended the Westerville Public Library event on Monday, October 26th, where I spoke on ghost hauntings and the paranormal through the eyes of Sherlock Holmes, and a little bit about the E4 method and how to investigate properly. It was my 7th consecutive year presenting at the library, which is the only library in the United States, we're pretty much in the world, that holds my books. I donated my latest effort, Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist, and was happy to find that my two other books that exist in the library, Handbook for the Amateur Paranormal Investigator 2, The Art and Science of Paranormal Investigation, and the E4 method, Breaking the Mold of Paranormal Investigation, were both currently out being read, which is exactly what I wanted to see. It's kind of weird. I go to the library and I don't want to see my books. That's great. That means that somebody's got them out reading. Hopefully they didn't steal them. And eventually I hope to share bits and pieces of this presentation, maybe just parts during the Paranormal News Insider, whether it's related to a story or we have a slow news week. And I can bring you some of that stuff, some of that information, which I think is pretty valuable to anybody who's involved in ghost investigations or wants to know how to do things a little bit better. And I've been booked already again at the Westerville Public Library for May 12th. This time I'll be speaking on cryptozoology. This event will be the weekend after the 2016 Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure with Eric Altman. Also in attendance will be Stan Gordon and a few other people, that one more speaker at least, that I don't know who that is yet. And when I do find out, I'll let you know. Got my camping spot already taken up for my tent. It's paid for. Looking forward to it. It's going to be a fun time, rain or shine. And some other information from last week. Again, I mentioned this, while there was no live Paranormal News Insider, I did publish something special for this time of the year, which is pretty much tradition for me to do here on the Paranormal News Insider. This year, I presented the show hosted by the famous producer Ralph Edwards called Suspense, and the episode called Ghost Hunt. And that is actually back from June 23rd, 1949. So while the show is pretty much ear candy, it does give you a few glimpses into some beliefs about ghosts of that time. If you haven't heard it, I've heard it a couple of times, and that's why I remembered it, and it's something that I've always wanted to put on the air. I recommend heading over to the Paranormal News Insider archives at paranewsinsider.com and clicking on the Archives tab at the top. And if you want to learn a little bit more about ghosts, I highly recommend that you tune in tonight. Same channel, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern. You can figure that out. I'm not good with the whole time thing. As Frank Lee talks with world-renowned parapsychologist Dr. Barry Taff tonight. Well, I might listen for an hour or so, but I have some other things to do outside, and I'll mention that a little later on in the show. This week's news is brought to you by the Thomas Francis University. The Thomas Francis University is a metaphysics school that offers online spiritually based bachelor's, master's, and PhD doctoral metaphysical degrees, as well as single standalone courses in related metaphysical and esoteric topics. Instructors are easily accessible and offer world-class customer service and instruction. TFU and other ICMHS schools have hundreds of students and graduates in more than 50 countries worldwide. For more information on the Thomas Francis University, please visit tfuuniversity.org. And while I've never taken classes at Thomas Francis University, I'm wrapping up a course that I've designed for this based on the E4 method. Hopefully I can have that done. I'm not going to set any time limit on it, but I'm probably not going to finish until early of next year. But my goal is by the end of January, I'm going to have that class up and running. And I will be an instructor at TFU, Thomas Francis University. Again, tfuuniversity.org. Lots of classes, lots of great information. You don't have to get a degree there. There's a lot of great classes, individually standalone courses on a number of fantastic topics. So check them out. And that brings us to the news. Lots of news, as I mentioned. A lot of other things I want to cover, including the book of the week. Hopefully I can get to that. If not, I'll double up on something next week. We'll see what happens. So let's jump into the news here. We're going to first talk about a little cryptozoology. We're going to talk about the Loch Ness Monster. So what do we have about that Loch Ness Monster? Well, I mentioned a few weeks ago how crop circles may have been born in English pubs. Well, now it seems that the Loch Ness Monster may have been created not at the bottom of Loch Ness, but at the bottom of a nice ale. Well, the monster was supposedly created by a man named D.G. Garrity, who was hired by several Scottish hotel owners to help drum up business through tourism. Well, the group was supposedly inspired by the Lake Ogopogo's folkloric monster in Canada. They were also purportedly inspired by a book. Professor Gareth Williams suggested these claims in a new book that suggests this theory that the Loch Ness Monster was created to help spur sagging tourism after the Great Depression. He also pointed out in his research that the answer to the story behind the monster may lie in a short extract from a semi-autobiographical, wow, that's so easy to say, called Maurice. In the novel, the narrator described how the story of the monster in the Scottish Loch was invented in a pub near Trafalgar Square. Professor Williams said that the lack of sightings of the monster before 1930 strengthens the argument that the monster was made up in the early 1930s. Once a sighting took place, the floodgates were opened and remain open to this day, despite many photographs being disproven as hoaxes or even misinterpretations. Probably more hoaxes nowadays than misinterpretations. Even decades-old photographs have been disproven or discovered as hoaxes, even recently. Footprints purportedly of the monster were discovered to be created by a hippopotamus foot. Not a living hippopotamus, but a stuffed hippopotamus foot. Well, many new photographs and evidence continue to pop up, only to be discovered as hoaxes or, again, misinterpretations. So is the Loch Ness Monster real? Well, I can dig deeper into that mystery and talk more about what people think it is, the plesiosaur and all these other things that really don't verify any kind of facts. So I'll just keep the simple, quick answer. I'll give you two words, not likely. And the story might sound like a nail in the coffin, but the story of Nessie has survived this long and is doubtful to disappear due to facts, just as it has all these years. This is some good information, and it may make it into my handbook for the amateur cryptozoologist if I ever do a third edition. And it's interesting to see how every time some new story comes out that disproves a photograph or a piece of evidence or a piece of evidence is put out there. I know last year we had a couple of photographs of a purported fin that those were shown to be as hoaxes. Now, the guy who did the one last year is still in business as a tourism operator on a boat around Loch Ness, so it didn't hurt his business at all. And it doesn't ever seem to hurt Nessie. I guess no good news, or you know, even bad news is still good news, or I guess any news, however that goes. You know the saying, any news is good news, whether it's bad or good. And he will continue to live on, whether it's real or not. So never been there. Hopefully one day I'd like to go kayak around Loch Ness. I think that'd be pretty fun. Now, some of these stories that I'm going to talk about, I do put on different social media outlets. It's really hard to keep up with all the things that I do. Obviously, I have a personal one, but I also run quite a few others, including the Paranormal News Insider one. So just as a reminder, the Paranormal News Insider can be found on Facebook at facebook.com/ParanewsInsider, on Twitter with @ParanewsInsider, as well as on Google Plus at plus.google.com/ParanewsInsider. And of course, you can find information on conferences, conventions, as well as listen to the archives of the Paranormal News Insider by going to the home for all things anomalous at ParanewsInsider.com. You can also reach me through any of these various social media outlets, as well as old-fashioned email at insider@ParanewsInsider.com. And that's my social media plug for the week. Now, let's get into some UFO news. And I got some interesting UFO news just before this, but I'm going to talk quickly about this video here. Hey, I'm willing to swim with Nessie any time of the week. It is a little cold up there, though. That's the problem with the water. If I ever get the chance, I'm going in. So, UFOs. One interesting UFO video. And if you're in the chat room, you're watching this right now. The link is posted. One interesting UFO video this week claims to have the clearest photograph of a UFO ever taken. It's impossible, right? Between Bigfoot, Sasquatch, and UFOs, nothing is supposed to come in clear, right? Well, the event took place on the night of October 24th, 2015, over the skies of New Boston, Ohio. Now, New Boston is situated along the Ohio River near the Kentucky River in southern Ohio. Near the state of Kentucky, right along the Ohio River. It's pretty much straight south of Columbus, so it's pretty much right in the center of the state, all the way at the bottom. Pretty close to Point Pleasant, by the way, if you know anything about Point Pleasant. I'm Mothman, which is weird because it's the first thing I thought of when I heard New Boston and this weird shape. It's called butterfly shape here, a UFO. Now, at 7 p.m., a man in the sun observed a strange-looking butterfly-shaped craft flying slowly and silently above them. The craft then drifted over a Walmart parking lot, yeah, we were just talking about that, and strangely faded away into the darkening skies. The son managed to take a few still shots while the father filmed the craft going over the lights of the parking lot area. Tyler Glockner, who operates YouTube channel Secure Team 10, who posted the video, swears that the video is not only real, but states that this is definitely not just a UFO, but in fact an alien craft. So that's exciting, right? This should be on the front page of every newspaper in the world if this is true. So what's my take? Well, the first thing you do with videos like this is check the facts. Whatever's available, you look into, you dig into, you weigh different things that you're seeing. Is this, in fact, the real area? And when I watched the video, I was able to distinguish that it was, in fact, shot near a Walmart parking lot. So the first thing I did was go find a Walmart in New Boston. Found it right there, smack dab in the middle of the city, pretty close to the Ohio River. Matched up the direction in which the witness said that it went. So far, so good, and the lighting seemed to be that same time of the day. But another fact that I checked was the weather. In the video, it is said to have taken place on October 24th, 2015 at 7 p.m. in New Boston, Ohio. So searching historical weather, I found that on that date, that time, and that location, it had been overcast for hours, and it had been raining most of the day. Well, if you watch the video, it looks pretty clear to me as the sun sinks in the west. And the time of day does seem consistent with the video showing the middle stages of a sunset. But a few other things seem to be a bit off about this story. The more you think about it, the still photographs seem to be taken much earlier than the video based on the lighting. It's impossible, even at the slow speed the craft was traveling, although the lights are on at the Walmart parking lot, which may suggest some varying camera sensitivity between the video and the photographs that were taken. But it is highly suspect. Another strange thing is how the craft was slowly moving out of sight and disappeared instantly instead of continuing to grow small like a normal object would. This is suggestive of CGI instead of a real object. With YouTube videos, I tend to examine the channel to see what type of content is associated with the user as well. This is sometimes a pretty dead giveaway. In Secure Team 10's case, the channel is full of fake UFO videos. Many of them are pirated from other sources. The channel itself is full of advertisements, and anytime that I click on a YouTube video and you have to sit there through an advertisement, even if you click go to the video, it's the person's still getting paid every time their video pops up. So it's basically clickbait, and that person's getting paid even for me to sit here and talk about it. And as I posted it in here on the in the chat room, we just gave that guy a few nickels. So there is some motivation here to go along with the story, even if this person is not involved in any kind of conspiracy or cover up or fraudulently created video. But I would honestly have to say that this is just some way for this kid to make money while he's probably living in his mom's basement. So, and even there, I see the channel is itself also asking for donations. So that's a little weird. And it's sad and it's unfortunate. You know, there are people that are out there seeing things in the sky and reporting them and saying that, you know, these are real experiences and these people are genuine. And unfortunately, people like this are taking advantage of either realistic sightings or just creating fake ones for clickbait. And speaking of UFOs, there's some trouble out in India right now. A story out of Delhi, India, over the sighting of multiple UFOs over the Gandhi International Airport has government officials on high alert. These agencies, including the Indian Air Force, are so alarmed that they have determined the need to shoot these objects out of the sky if necessary. Pretty scary. On October 27th, an air traffic controller spotted a UFO, but nothing showed up on radar. On October 30th, an Air Force officer at the airport reported seeing three UFOs over the airport in an 11-minute time span. After the second incident, the Intelligence Bureau, the Indian Air Force, the Delhi Police, and the Bureau of Civil Aviation Security, as well as the Central Industrial Security Force, held an emergency meeting and gave the Indian Air Force the UFO shoot down order. That's a lot of people meeting. Wow, it's a lot of groups of individuals. This report was given by the website Mysterious Universe, which also gives some theories why the Indian government is apparently panicked about these UFO sightings. They state that the UFO sightings are on the rise across India, which includes two small examples over the span of 4 months. They patch these sightings together with speculation of a purported underground UFO base somewhere in the 1,500-mile chain of the mountains in the Himalayas that encompasses 420,500 square miles spanning 5 countries. Nobody seems to know where this thing is. That's a little speculative. They also mentioned the recent story of the mysterious piece of space junk that will splash down somewhere in the Indian Ocean on Friday, November 13th. A piece of debris that, while is unknown exactly what it is, there is a small list of known items that NASA has identified. And speaking of small, despite the story, the object is only 1 to 2 meters long and has a low density, meaning it is either hollow or just a piece of shrapnel from a rocket. Mysterious Universe also states, quote, the Indian government may have also been jumpy because New Delhi was hosting the India-Africa Forum Summit, where Indian leaders were meeting with the heads of 14 African countries to discuss topics ranging from climate change to terrorism. Were they fearful the UFOs were drones sent by humans to disrupt the forum or by aliens? Unquote. Well, I think the aliens part is a bit much. And again, I did my homework. I went and checked in some of the information that's available online, and seeing that it was from a particular news source, I obviously dug up that news source. They didn't provide it on the website there, but I was able to dig that up fairly quickly, and we're able to disseminate some of this information. The Hindustan Times online e-paper, I found that story pretty quickly by searching for it. And reading the story, I did find that, in fact, sources said that a meeting of Intelligence Bureau, Central Industrial Security Force, the Bureau for Civil Aviation Security, and the Delhi Police had been conducted with the Indian Air Force and been asked to keep a strict watch on aerial threats. And sources say that the IAF has also been authorized to shoot down any suspicious objects if need be. Well, the Central Industrial Security Force, the CISF, which is responsible for the security of the airport, have been asked to keep a watch on the airside. Well, the problem is the UFOs seen were identified as more than likely drones. They just weren't sure exactly if that's what they were. One was seen over a runway on Tuesday and another seen on Friday over a runway as well. Another object was seen about 8 miles from the airport. Another observation was a pilot complained of being flashed by a laser from the ground. Well, tying these observations together sounds more like a terrorist plot or someone getting their toys too close to the airport, which even in India, we may not think of India as on the par of the United States as far as their security and as far as their standards of airport security are concerned, but they're right there with us. So, you know, if that kind of thing happens here in the United States, security is increased. We may not give the shoot down order, but there's a little bit more of a panic over there about air security than there is here in the United States. Not saying that there shouldn't be as much kind of thought here in the United States, but that's just how it is here. Air safety is it's a big concern no matter what the country, where you're at. And a UFO does not mean an alien-controlled aircraft. It merely means an unidentified flying object. So to jump to one conclusion without that information to automatically just say that these are aliens and we have to defend our airport, you know, like some kind of movie, it's silly to jump to that conclusion. And we just have to be a little bit more responsible about the way that we react to these stories and trying to instill fear. Just because it's happening in India doesn't mean that these types of things can happen here. And would we jump to that same conclusion? Well, I think some people would. But again, UFOs does not imply aliens. It just means it's an unidentified craft, flying object, essentially. And they're pretty sure that these are drones. But this story, I'm certain, will continue to evolve, and Mysterious Universe and other news outlets will more than likely ignore it if the realistic outcome does happen, that it's more than likely just a drone. Now, some other news on UFOs. I just today, actually just before I came on the air, I found the MUFON sighting statistics for October. Now, I'm not happy about that because I never found the ones from September. And I've put a few emails out there and a few comments on some message boards trying to get the information for September. For some reason, was not posted anywhere. I'm not sure why. I do know that the MUFON symposium took place in September, so most of MUFON was pretty wrapped up with that for majority of the month. And talk about MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. They release monthly sighting statistics on UFO sighting reports, and I'm trying to chronicle those for you on a month-to-month basis and give you the overall sighting statistics month-to-month this year so you can kind of keep track yourself. And in January, there was 721 worldwide reports. February had 607. March had 684. April saw 709 worldwide reports, and May had a huge jump with 900. And the United States alone had 737 of them, which is more than pretty much any month so far in the year with worldwide reports, which is an interesting turn. In June, the increase continued with the most UFO reports in a single month in MUFON history, with 1,402 reports. The United States alone had 1,180 reports, with Canada second with 84, and the United Kingdom third with 42. July also followed up with some big numbers, an increase of over 35% from the July of 2014, and it came in with 1,353 reports. The month of August had 1,143 worldwide reports, with the United States having 827 of them. And again, for some reason, I've not been able to get my hands on the September sighting statistics, but I'm not going to give up. I'm going to find those for you. I'm going to give you that report, whether it's in December or January of next year. I don't know when, but I'm going to continue to go after those numbers and provide them to you so you know what's going on in the skies over the world. And these, again, MUFON is based here in the United States. So a majority of these sightings and the statistics themselves come from the United States. The United Kingdom does have some fans, as does Canada, and some of the other countries do report to MUFON because it is trying to establish itself as a worldwide organization. However, there are a lot of other organizations that exist out there and you know, trying to chronicle what's going on in our skies and keep tabs on reports. Now, not all of these investigation outlets are the same. Some of them investigate a little bit more than others. MUFON has a field investigators manual, which is by far one of the greatest things I've ever read as far as methodologies and how to investigate anomalous phenomena. It covers everything from the interview entire A to Z on how to interview people to different things you need to know specifically as a UFO investigator, how to contact local and government police agencies, air traffic control centers, things like this, and as well as what to look out for as far as astronomical issues, cloud things, natural phenomena, so on and so forth, and what to look for, and as well as how to investigate these cases from beginning to end. Unfortunately, these cases aren't always followed in, you know, with so much scrutiny, and some of them are just put on the website, and basic information is just taken from the witness and just put on the website, and there's really not that much investigation done. Some states only have a handful of investigators, maybe a dozen investigators for an entire state. Granted, the average state usually only gets about 20. You know, some states have more more cases per month than other states. I think the most I've ever seen is about 150, I think. It's usually California. California has the largest population of the United States, of any state. So obviously per capita, well, with the capital, per capita, it's actually a percentage, and it's going to be pretty in line with a lot of other states. But since the population is so huge, they actually have a higher number of sightings. And I want to thank in advance MUFON Georgia for me being able to find the sighting statistics for October. I've searched high and low, again, like I said, for the sighting statistics for September, unable to find those. And before I bring those to you, I've got to do something real quick here. I want to mention to you that you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York on the CJ Mars Radio Network. And this is the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And back to the sighting statistics for October 2015 from MUFON. Now, I mentioned that, well, I don't know what September was, but again, I do know August had 1,143 reports, with the United States having 827. And this last month, October, there was 992 worldwide reports through their case management system. And the United States had 777 of those reports of the total of 992. United Kingdom was second with 59. Canada was third with 56, and a very steep drop off to Australia that had 15. Germany and India both had 7. So India having an increase in UFOs, maybe, but not according to MUFON. 7 is not that much in a month's period of time for such a large country. Granted, again, they may have their own UFO reporting systems, as I do know that Mexico has quite a few of them, including local news stations that actually employ UFO investigators. You know, we have on your side kind of reporters here in the United States that go after local businesses for different things. But down in Mexico, they actually have, especially in Mexico City, they have investigators that work at some of these news stations that go out in the streets and investigate these sightings. And Mexico only reported 6 sightings. They finished tied with Portugal with 6 sightings in the month of October. And what about the United States? What about the distribution by state? Well, like I mentioned before, California typically leads. They had 115 reports turned in. Now, here's something odd that I just see right off the bat. Michigan finished second with 47 reports. I'm not sure about that. I haven't had time to really dig in and research this, or really even – this is the first time actually reading about the state-by-state distribution. And that's really, really weird, because usually California and New York top the list. Texas is usually in the top 3, 4. Michigan is usually somewhere in the top 5, but that's pretty weird to see them number 2. Texas turned in 46 reports. Florida was fourth with 44. Ohio and New York were tied with 40 reports each. Pennsylvania turned in 35. Illinois had 28. Indiana, 24. Missouri, 22. Tied with Arizona, that also had 22. Colorado finished with 21 reports. North Carolina had 20 reports turned into MUFON. Oregon had 19. Georgia and Maryland both had 18. New Jersey and Washington State had 17. Nevada had 13. Massachusetts and Wisconsin with 11. Oklahoma and Virginia with 10 each. New Mexico, 9. Idaho and Utah with 8. And a whole bunch of states here: Alabama, Louisiana, Montana, Tennessee, Nebraska, New Hampshire, and Mississippi had 7, and anybody else had 6 or less. So if I didn't mention your state, sorry, can't help you. Looks like every state had one, but maybe next month we'll see what happens. And something I usually never talk about here is the shape of object reported. It's usually sphere is always number one anyway. And sphere was number one with 155 reports. Star-like second with 102. And there was a lot of stars, I should say planets, out. Whenever Neptune is out, there's usually Lots of sightings of UFOs, strangely. Circle was third with 100. And again, big thanks to MUFON Georgia, the chapter of the Mutual UFO Network, for providing the sighting statistics. And again, hopefully I'll have the September edition sometime soon. Well, let's see. Where do I leave off here? Ghost news. Oh, boy. Well, we're going to talk some demons. And we're going to talk some ghost tourism. You know, I've mentioned in the past that I kind of broke up my group over being involved with ghost tourism. It wasn't something I wanted to be involved with. I like to teach and train, but I also like to help clients. So normally, I like to do client-based investigations. And unfortunately, my group was starting to do a little bit more and more of the ghost hunting type of activities and get involved with going to places like Mansfield Reformatory, Waverly Hills Sanatorium, and different places like that, Moundsville. And we just got involved in going to these places and trying to figure out how to get money to go into these places. So we started to do tours where we would rent out the location, charge money for other people to go, and we would just show them around or allow them to do different things. And typically I like to teach classes, so we're kind of justified in doing what we're doing because I'm providing a service prior to the investigation, as well as our knowledge and background being involved in said investigations. But it just seemed like we spent all of our time and effort doing it, and it was just we're kind of caught up in this wheel where we would do this and then go investigate to make money, to get more notoriety because we've been to this place or that place, and so we could get more people to come to these events. I mean, these were actual conversations. Maybe if we went to Waverly Hills, more people would come to our events and we could go to other places. I had an issue with that. I had a problem, and I felt like that we should have gone in a different direction. We should have been a better group, being around for, at that time, 15 years we were celebrating as a ghost investigation group. Obviously, not all those people were involved for that period of time. And so I guess I felt that pressure more than anybody else because I felt that we should have been a leader in the field of investigation, in the state of Ohio at least, for being involved in investigating as long as we had. But ghost tours, these are a very, very big thing, especially around Halloween and this time of the year, the fall. Everybody seems to jump on the ghost bandwagon and to watch all these TV shows, all these movies, and usually a lot of new movies come out as well. And the world turns to us. The attention, you know, comes right to us all the time. And unfortunately, sometimes these things are taken maybe the wrong way or out of their context. But sometimes maybe we need to really examine what we're doing out here in the field when it comes to doing ghost tours. And this story is out of Kansas. And it's, you know, well, I'll talk more about what I feel about the story as I get through this. Ghost tours, again, are nothing new in the world of paranormal. And there are probably now more tour companies or paranormal groups that conduct tours than groups that conduct client-based investigations. It seems like it's all about the thrill of the hunt anymore, as well as about showcasing what we do and how we do it. I mean, you either have a paranormal radio show, okay, I'm guilty as charged, or you're a tour company or something else. You're involved in some kind of thing outside of just normal operation of a group. Most groups are like this. There's nothing wrong with that. But again, there is kind of a separation now of client-based investigations. Ghost Tours of Kansas has found themselves in a bit of hot water as they recently conducted a public tour and investigation of Topeka's Moose Lodge. The lodge was the scene on April 11th, 1955, where police officer Clarence Boots Shields was fatally shot after surprising two burglars. Joey Little, grandson of Clarence Shields, discovered that the Ghost Tours of Kansas was hosting a benefit ghost hunt at Topeka's Moose Lodge and felt that the group was exploiting his grandfather's death for profit. Little states, quote, "My family has no problem with ghost hunters going to the Moose Lodge for entertainment, but what we do have a problem with is when companies like this charge admission to participants." Little wrote in an email to the Wichita Eagle, quote, "This is tasteless and horrible. We view charging money to hunt our father and grandfather, a fallen Topeka police officer, absolutely wrong." Well, the first quote didn't really make sense. I mean, if people are going to help benefit a location, you're going to charge admission to participants. That's just kind of what you do when you have a benefit. You need to benefit something other than yourself, right? Or at least the people that are showing up. But the second half, I understand this. This is tasteless and horrible. Charging money to hunt our father and grandfather is absolutely wrong. That makes sense. It makes perfect sense in that context. On the night of the hunt, he went to the Moose Lodge to protest. I told people wanting me to leave to call the Topeka Police Department if they wanted me off the property, and kept repeating how this hunt was distasteful, especially since money was being charged, making the scene of my grandfather's murder basically now an amusement park, Little said. Well, Kathy Ramirez, the owner of Ghost Tours of Kansas, offers 11 ghost tours in 9 cities. Most of her tours are in eastern Kansas in cities such as Topeka, Kansas City, Lawrence, Atchison, Leavenworth, Shawnee, Holton, and Wichita. Although this year she does not have a tour in Wichita, she offers tours 9 months out of the year and takes a break from mid-November through February. Ramirez said she did charge admission on October 9th, the night she conducted a hunt at the Topeka Moose Lodge. She said she charged $20 a person for 22 people to go through the building. 3/4 of the proceeds went to the Moose Lodge for the building's maintenance fund. She said the rest went to Ramirez and her team. She says she charges admission for all of her tours, which I guess if you're running a business, if she is running a legitimate business, then why would you not charge admission? Doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I get it, but I don't get it. Ramirez's website, Ghost Tours of Kansas, posted this Facebook message after the Moose Lodge event. Quote, "Just to clarify to any family and friends of the fallen officer Clarence Boots Shields, who was shot and killed at the Moose Lodge many years ago, there is no evidence that he haunts the Moose Lodge." The ghost – I got to laugh at that. Anyway, I'll come back to that. The ghosts that do haunt there include Charlie in the kitchen, the little old lady in daycare, and very happy dancing ghosts in the bingo room. Wow, where's my $20? I want to lay that down for that entertainment. Sorry, back to the quote. As in any investigation performed by GTK, Ghost Tours Kansas, all factors are taken into consideration. Rest assured, there are no ill regards are implied to your ancestors, unquote. Ancestors? Really? Maybe she doesn't know the definition of ancestor implies someone more distant than a grandparent. Well, anyway, I had to kind of stop and laugh at the fact that she mentions that there is no evidence that he haunts the Moose Lodge. Well, where's the evidence of all Charlie in the kitchen and all these other things? Or where's the evidence that he's not actually there? Regardless, he died on the location. There should be a little sensitivity, I would think. Ramirez also stated about Little's emails and protests, quote, "As to his family, with all their hate emails, threats, I wonder what he would think about their behavior. It is not his proudest moment, I'm sure," unquote. Well, it seems the two sides have their own argument, but Bill Miskell, chairman of the Kansas Law Enforcement Officer Memorial Committee, offered his view of the story. Quote, "At this time of the year, you have these kinds of seasonal activities where people are thinking we can make everybody aware of local history. We can throw some of the Halloween aspect into it, and everything is right with the world. What we may lose track of is the fact that there is still a family surviving from an event that occurred 60 years ago, living relatives for whom this is still a very real event," unquote. And while there may not have been any malicious intent by a group of people participating in the ghost hunt, the event can still have an impact and unintended consequences. Quote, "From the perspective of the state law enforcement group, we owe everyone who has served the state and paid with the ultimate sacrifice our fullest respect throughout the year," Miskell said. I think that should go with everybody, not just law enforcement. That's side comment there. So are these tour operators justified in bringing the local history to life through these stories and the investigation of ghosts? Should there be more caution played to the living relatives of these ghost stories? Maybe the hunt aspect of these tours should be eliminated altogether. It's enough, in my opinion, to tour a facility and talk about the history of the location, but to assume that there are some people who died there that are ghosts and others who are based on stories, which creates facts based on assumptions that can create these unintended consequences. Sadly, the ghost field has become more about exploitation and money-making than any discoveries or actually helping people in need. And as I mentioned, in late 2011, I decided to break up my paranormal group, Ohio Paranormal Investigation Network, as we were still celebrating 15-year history of the group. We'd become trapped in a cycle of putting on events that glorified the tragic history of a location and charging money while still offering classes as an educational piece. We were still taking money through these events just so we could go to popular destinations, like I mentioned, Mansfield Reformatory, Waverly Hills, Moundsville Penitentiary, and so on and so forth. Again, to generate popularity for the groups so that more people would show up to our events. It's just a vicious cycle that I had to break. And it wasn't anything that I had in mind for a group that had 15 years experience in the field. I do not agree with the exploitation of individuals in the capacity with searching for evidence of their continued existence of some part of their personality that may exist after the death of the body. The ghost field should not attempt to justify their actions by saying they're not provoking or their opinion that certain individuals apply to their law of ghosts. The whole ghost tour field has gotten out of hand, and while many of these companies are legitimate businesses, I'm willing to bet that many of these operating outside of legal means, meaning they don't have business licenses or proper paperwork filed with the government. Just as many paranormal investigation groups claim to be nonprofit, yet they are not listed on state sites that list these legally recognized organizations. The bottom line is we have to be more cognizant and respectful of the living, as we have implied that we are there for those who are departed. So it kind of goes both ways here. I understand the history. I understand giving back to a location like this by generating some interest and by participating in these things, by bringing people in there and attempting to give back. But I'm sure that that's not the case for all these tours, that they're not, you know, doing it for the benefit of that location. Most of it's for profit. They're making money off of this, and a lot of people do this actually for a living. This is what they do. This is how they generate income. Whether or not that's wrong, I don't know. It depends on an individual basis, I guess, and how they're going about it and what they're charging. But when it comes to exploiting people who have living relatives, I think that people need to be a little bit more cautious and, again, a little bit more cognizant of their approach and what they're doing and how they're approaching things. And, well, we're going to get to the big story here. And, I could beat the drum all day about the field, about paranormal investigations, about ghost tours, but we're going to talk the other sore subject, the other infected wound that we have on the ghost world field, and that's TV shows. You can't avoid it. It's going to happen. I'm going to talk about it, but I'm going to provide you some information that hopefully you don't set your DVR for, but that you're aware of. So probably the biggest story last week was the televised exorcism that was broadcast live on Destination America. The planned exorcism took place in a home in St. Louis, Missouri, that had once involved the church-sanctioned exorcism of a boy known as the pseudonym Roland Doe, among other names, in 1949, which was witnessed by 48 people. This exorcism is the one that inspired the 1971 book and subsequent 1973 cult classic movie, The Exorcist. The show was attacked on the day before it took place. Last Friday, October 30th, the Catholic Archdiocese of St. Louis spoke out against the use of this exorcism being used as entertainment. Quote, "No exorcism can take place without the authority of the local Roman Catholic ordinary," unquote. Auxiliary Bishop Emeritus Robert Herman said in a statement, quote, any attempt to use the solemn rite of the exorcism as entertainment exposes all participators to the danger of future hidden satanic attack, Ehrman said. My voice used for emphasis. We cannot play games with Satan and expect to win. Well, Destination America stated that they have enlisted a trained and qualified exorcist to perform the ritual, not on a person, but on a house. And again, the Archdiocese commented, anyone involved in this production who claims to be a member of the Catholic clergy is not affiliated with the Archdiocese of St. Louis, nor are they operating under the authority of the Vatican. Wow, you had to pull that card, didn't you? Any purported exorcism for the purposes of entertainment trivializes this ancient rite of the Roman Catholic Church and the very danger of evil. Now, on one hand, I see how the local Catholic Church may feel a little bit jaded, a little bit left out. I mean, this is their area of expertise. They've trained for it for a long time, apparently since the ancient times, as they say. And I guess they feel like they were left out in the dark. And all I can say about that is, welcome to Hollywood. I mean, they should get it by now. For the church to think that they alone can practice exorcisms safely and have soul dispersion for these rites, it's a bit selfish and softly exposes their underlying motives. Now, I've talked about the Ouija board issue during the Paranormal News Insider in the past, where the reemergence of the spiritualism era after World War I heightened the efforts of the Catholic Church to fight for their parishioners. The Catholic Church made many efforts to discredit those involved in spiritualism, as well as the methods of contacting the dead, all in an effort to save their failing businesses of operating the church and scaring their parishioners back to their pews and donation baskets. It seems the fight has never ended, and belief and fear are lashing out once again. Well, Mr. Pot, meet Mr. Kettle. This entire story that created the book and the movie The Exorcist purportedly started when the boy, again known as Roland Doe, was using a Ouija board, which ended up with him possessed. On the other hand, people have to understand that Ghost Adventures, Ghost Hunters, and this show, Exorcism Live, don't forget the exclamation point, as well as other television shows are on television for the expressed reason of entertainment. So the church got that right. This entertainment is provided by selling airtime to sponsors who are trying to get you to buy their products. So in reality, these shows are put on television for nothing more than to sell cars and other products to provide financial support for the networks. The more outlandish and entertaining the show, the more profits are found thanks to the Nielsen family. I had wondered about what the show was really about, and it didn't take long for it to pop up. Others involved in the show included Medium Chip Coffee, Bishop James Long, and the Tennessee Wraith Chasers, whose claim to fame, other than being the cast appearing on the Destin America show Ghost Asylum, is to be the first paranormal group to capture a ghost. Wow. While the show pretty much fell flat in producing results, it was the reaction on social media that tore the show to pieces. Twitter was full of people mocking the Tennessee Wraith Chasers, their black clothes, as well as their acting, their accents, and failure to produce any real evidence. Well, in addition to pointing out the timing of the commercial breaks, at RiftWolf52 said, quote, commercial break in the middle of the exorcism. Good job, guys. The devil clearly needs a new Subaru and some Kit Kats, unquote. Well, the show concluded with an attempted exorcism, but also included a seance and the use of what the Tennessee Wraith Chasers call the devil's toy box, essentially a cube with mirrors inside. The premise is that the demon will become trapped when it enters the cube by the mirrors on the inside. Despite their intended claims, this is not their own invention, nor have they improved on anything, as the roots of the devil's toy box go back very far in history. But again, they're only based on belief and fear, and not actual stories. Author and popular investigator Joshua P. Warren, known for his work with the Brown Mountain Lights, uses his vast theories of tying ghosts with science with the thought that the devil's toy box actually works because of his thoughts on light and wavelengths. Okay. Warren's hypotheses are tiresome, as anyone can note who has ever heard him speak or read his book, How to Hunt Ghosts. Well, the speculation is fine, but to make assumptions based on science is no more effective than chasing ghosts in the dark with flashlights. While Warren may have inspired the Wraith Chasers' use of the cube, it has also been famous in the movies. The 1987 Clyde Barker thriller Hellraiser used the six-sided mirror concept of the Devil's Toy Box as the inspiration for the cube used in the movie. In reality, the legend of this concept is not to trap demons, but to separate the living from their own reality. It is said that the individuals who enter the structure and then close it will undergo surreal, disturbing phenomena that will simultaneously grant them a revelatory experience and permanently warp their mind. Well, I think this might have happened a time or two with the Tennessee Wraith Chasers. It seems the show was used as a launching point for a pair of new series, one called The Demon Files, where at the beginning of the show it states, "Warning, aggressive paranormal activity may be due to ghosts or darker entities. And investigating these cases and performing exorcism without the proper training could be mortally dangerous. Viewer discretion is advised." Really? Awesome. Let's go get some black shirts printed up and start taking some demonic cases right now. This latest show is not going to scare everyone, and it will more than likely start a whole new class of ghost groups that are hell-bent on finding demons and practicing exorcisms that would be inspired by the thrill instead of the actual religious intent. The show seems to use the exact same protocols as the hundreds of other monkey see, monkey do groups use, the spirit box, EMF detector, EVP sessions, and questions demanding answers instead from ghosts that are categorized now as demons. The other big announcement during the show is the debut of another fine paranormal program called Paranormal Lockdown, starring former Ghost Adventure star Nick Groff and Katrina Weidman. Supposedly trapped in a house for 72 hours and edited down to 44 minutes for your entertainment. Well, Destination America is also home to Ghost Stalkers with Nick Groff, Ghost Asylum, Ghost in My House, and A Haunting, all high-quality paranormal entertainment chocked full of reality. And also on the network, Discovery Network, you have Alaska Monsters, Alaska Haunting, Monsters and Mysteries in America. These are some of the worst shows when it comes to any dose of reality. The parent channel of Destination America, Discovery Channel, formerly aired A Haunting, as well as defunct shows including Ghost Hunters in 1996 to 1997. Now, that's a different one than what we're used to. Not the TAPS group. They were not associated with that at all, as well as Ghost Lab. And other Discovery Family Day shows have been Long Island Medium and Pet Psychic. Again, not really the greatest stuff on television. And that's it for that. I could go on and on about the TV shows, but it's not worth it. And I'm running out of time. So save it by the bell there. And when I mentioned the big skull that almost hit us back on Halloween, was in the news, in other news. We were buzzed once again by a large asteroid. This time it was actually believed to be a dead comet. On Halloween around 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, asteroid 2015 TB145 was about 2,000 feet in diameter, traveling at about 78,293 miles per hour, and was nicknamed Spooky, as well as the Great Pumpkin, due to passing the Earth at about 300,000 miles. Well, if you're wondering, the moon is about 238,000 miles away, so this is pretty close, but there was still no threat of it colliding with the Earth or the moon. Now, one thing astronomically that I want to mention, tonight the northeast may be treated to the aurora borealis, but I've been watching this over the course of the entire day, and unfortunately it looks like it's dipping. The aurora seems like it's lost a lot of strength, and it's back to the strength that it was last night. And here in Ohio, northeast Ohio, we had no sightings. And pretty much looks like it's going to dwindle once again. There was a huge storm that was announced, a storm alert that happened about 2-3 hours ago, and it only lasted for about 45 minutes, and traded to a great part of Northern Europe to the Northern Lights, who was encountering nighttime, and now we're in the nighttime, and they're getting ready for morning already. And hopefully we'll see something, but not going to hold my breath about the Aurora Borealis over North America. And again, it's only over certain parts of North America, Ohio, New York, Pennsylvania, and some of the other eastern states. But again, it looks like it's losing its power. And another thing to keep out for is the meteor shower that's going to take place November 18th, the Leonid shower. And I didn't get to the book of the week. The book of the week was Case for UFOs by John J. Ventry, a gentleman who appeared on Hangar One. I'll just carry that over to next week, and we'll talk about that book a little bit more in depth. It's a very interesting book. Hopefully I have some UFO stories to talk about next week as well. So to back that story up. And again, I want to mention that highly recommend you tune in 1 hour from now back to the same time, same channel, I should say, to Paranormalities and Ponderings with host Frank Lee, as he will bring you a very interesting show with world-renowned parapsychologist Dr. Barry Taff, again tonight on Paranormalities and Ponderings at 9 p.m. Eastern. And that's all I have tonight for you on the Paranormal News Insider. And this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.